Artie's Online.
No way.
Yeah. Good, because we're going to be winging this one tonight.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to do any show notes.
I'm sitting here thinking, what happened that talk about worthy? And I'm like, I watched some TV.
I know. Almost live from across the USA, this is Late Night Cure'em! Your hosts tonight are Josh, Barry J, and Barty, the Tug Hill Plateau King! Apple has some big announcements. Is Xbox losing to PS4? And we discuss the future of radio and television. All that and more on Late Night Cure'em! And now, digitally gathering at the plush QRM studios in Southwest New Hampshire. Here's Josh, Barry J, Barty, and No Michael. Welcome, everybody, to Late Night QRM show number 98 from the Southwest corner, where we're getting a little bit of rain. Here I am, Barry J. Oh, Southwest corner of New Hampshire. I always forget to say where of New Hampshire. I'm Barry J.
And from the opposite side of the same state, in the southeast corner of New Hampshire, where, again, the weather was great for riding, a little cloudy, but still nevertheless a great day. This was Josh. No, I am Josh. This is Jack.
Okay, your time to screw up, Barty.
Well, I almost feel like I have to. From the Tug Hill Plateau region of central New York, this is Barty.
Oh, that was perfect.
He did. He called it. One try, one take.
And Michael is not here this week.
That was pre-recorded.
There we go. Michael's not here this week because he is currently in Petaluma, California, and he's a live studio audience attendee of TWiT, This Week in Tech, right now. So we'll
when do they film that? Do they film that on Sundays?
Yeah, they do it on Sundays.
Yeah. Going on right now.
Well, it's live too. You can watch. They stream it live, and then of course, then they make it available in video and audio format.
That's right. That's right. You can see it on the Roku. I know that.
Yeah. So, we'll hear what that's all about next week, hopefully, when Michael gets home.
We could do split screen on your computer and watch it while we're doing this.
Probably Leo wouldn't have any problems with that, but that would be kind of boring.
So,
would you do like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 type?
Oh,
thing,
I love that show so much.
Hey, you know, that's not a bad idea for a podcast where you do that to other podcasts, Barty. That's a that's an interesting concept.
I love that idea.
Probably get in trouble by
a different podcast dissected.
Yeah, we'd probably get in trouble, though, if we did. Well, the other pods.
It's all Creative Commons, you know, as long as we're not charging any money.
Right. Well, and aside from that, what if it was one of our other podcasts?
Our own podcast?
Why the hell not? The third guys. You guys make fun of the other guys. It works.
I could see doing that to TWiT or something like that, you know. That would be kind of an interesting concept. Sit there and do. So it was kind of like what they were doing for the WWDC keynote. That's what TWiT actually did. They were sitting there commenting as it was going out live.
Oh, so, play by play?
Yeah, they were doing play by play of the keynote on Monday, last Monday.
So, well, there are a number of sites that do that, like Engadget and sites like that sit there and take pictures. And, yeah. You know, type in comments and things like that, and just constantly send a stream of pictures of what's being presented.
That's how I watched it at work, because you know they pretty much block all video and not well they block most of video and audio. So I watched it there, and then when I got home, I popped up the Apple TV, and they had it available on Apple TV, so I watched it on a Monday night to see what it was. But yeah, no, but on Twit, they were doing it live, but they weren't blogging it like the rest of the people do. They actually got a feed from it, and they were doing commentation, you know, commentating on it live, you know.
Well, that's better than last year when they did hand puppets.
Did they seriously do a hand puppet?
Yeah, they did. They were watching it, and they had hand puppets for the different characters, and they had the hand puppet doing the presentation.
Oh, man. Well,
it's been kind of hard to do. I didn't watch it, but listening to them talk about it afterwards, it seems kind of funny.
Well, we could talk about that right now. The keynote. Did you watch it, Barty, or did you?
I watched it at work the same way you did.
Okay, which was I watched it Monday night, and it was a lot better watching it in person than the keynote. I tried to use The Verge this time. I usually do Engadget, but this time I watched The Verge, and Engadget does it better.
That's who I watched it on.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Engadget in the future. Although,
plus they had Kevin Rose. Was it Kevin Rose? It was Kevin Rose that on there doing additional commentary, and he was funny as hell. He was pretty interesting.
Really?
Yeah, because he made comments like, "Oh no, not this crap again," stuff like that, you know.
Well, I thought it was yeah, it was pretty good. And again, like I said, I watched at home, and supposedly, well, obviously they did because Twit was getting it, but Apple actually streamed it live.
On Apple devices.
Was it that? Was that the way it was? It was live on Apple devices.
Yeah, you had to have like Apple TV or pick it up. Sure, if it was through iTunes, but it was mainly towards Apple devices. I don't think you could just get it on the general internet.
Oh, all really? Right. Okay. Well, I wouldn't have been able to watch it at work then.
Well.
So, but yeah, they made some pretty interesting announcements.
Like what?
They ran out of cats, they said, for the new OS X. and they jokingly brought up the OS X sea lion, and then they said, no, that wouldn't be right. And they had a picture of a circle with a sea lion facing it. And so now they're calling it after famous California places. And so the first one is where all the big waves are, where all the surfers go for the big waves, you know, and it's called Mavericks, California, I guess. And so the new one is OS X Mavericks. And it looks pretty neat. They've got some new features there. Again, it's not a huge jump. But then again, they're doing them once a year, and they never really used to do that. Sometimes you'd wait a couple years before you get an upgrade.
Right. And that's why it came out with such a big Shazam kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, it's a bit more incremental. I think that, you know, they're trying to keep the download sizes somewhat reasonable since they're not publishing them on disk anymore.
Right. And one of the big things that I kind of liked, and they were pushing on it, was they have tagging now for files, which I thought was kind of interesting. Basically, you've got a file there, and you can go ahead and create a tag and put it on there, like important things, or, you know, like for show notes and stuff here, I could put, like, you know, late night QRM show 30 or show 98, and any file that has to do with that, I can tag it with that, and it can be anywhere on your disk, but because it's all tagged like that, you can go bring up... I wanted to say Finder. You can bring up Finder, and you can click on the tags. Will be down at the bottom, and you can click on the tag, and all the files that you have tagged with that will show up in a window. And once you got the window open, you can drag and drop actually other files if you want them to have that tag also. So
really,
yeah. So it's a interesting, neat concept. I think easy way to organize things. other than physically putting them all in the same folder and things like that. So that way you can have it, you know, you could have it, well, you can tag it with multiple tags. So that means you can have one file show up in multiple tag options, which is another interesting way to organize things. So, mm-hmm. so that was kind of neat. Let's see, what else was there?
Yeah, kind of like having keywords to search on.
Yeah, yeah. Except for this, you know, it doesn't constantly search now because they have the tags. So, and they work also in Spotlight too. So you can search a tag. So that's kind of neat.
Yes. Spotlight, if you're not used to Mac OS, is a really, really awesome search tool that can cruise through your hard drive really, really fast and find all kinds of things based upon whatever search parameters you put in.
Right. It's one of the best ones. And so that's still there. One of the things, of course, this is an engine thing where everybody finds it boring, but it's really going to help out in the end, especially for laptops and stuff, is that they've redid the operating system so that it manages the CPU better, and therefore if you've got stuff out there running simultaneously, well, if something doesn't need the power, it'll actually kind of shut it down or put it more in the background than other ones, and all this does is help conserve battery life. And you do a little here, you do a little there, and pretty soon you'll find out, wow, my battery's not going dead as much.
That's actually pretty neat. That's pretty darn neat.
Well, they're also bringing iBooks to macOS 10 now, too, you know, which I always thought was, you know, kind of a glaring omission, you know, because you go ahead and buy books and you can read it on, or attempt to read it on an iPhone and read it on an iPad. But, you know, the biggest screen you have is your desktop, and you can't read the books you buy and through the iTunes store on that.
I agree with you. I agree that was a big omission, but they on one of the tech podcasts, they were saying that the guy who actually produced it, and I forget his name now, wanted to bring it to the desktop and laptop. Steve Jobs was definitely against it. He goes, no, you don't read books on those items. That's why we
really?
Have that's why we have
well,
the iPad and the iPhone.
Exactly.
I know, but that's the only reason why it didn't make it until now. Because he said Steve Jobs put the kibosh on it.
Yeah. Maps is also coming to the desktop as well.
Yes. That
and, that's improving, hopefully.
Yes.
They said it was better.
And they also have a, that's iOS, so we'll wait until to talk about that. But yes, it looks a little better, but they didn't say a lot about it. So other than, you know, isn't it magnificent, wonderful, they didn't say they perfected it anymore.
They probably still have a tender wound there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but they've also improved the multiple display capability, where before it was always kind of kludged by third parties to be able to display on multiple screens.
Mm-hmm.
That's been, now they've implemented true multiple screens.
Yeah, it seems pretty neat too, because depending on what screen you're on, you can, you know, move your cursor down to the bottom and the little launcher will show up on either display. And there were a couple other features. Also, you can use, if you have, of course, Apple TV, mm-hmm. you can use your television as one display and then say your laptop or your desktop monitor as another display. So yeah, that was kind of an interesting concept too.
Yeah, so that's kind of like you can do like a slide presentation on a large screen and have like notes and things like that on your local screen.
Right.
That's pretty handy.
Yeah, I think excellent for business for doing that. Or you can be sitting there streaming a TV show on one thing and, you know, searching IDBM or whatever it is. I what is it? The IDB...
IDBM.
Yeah, is it IDBM?
No, IMDB.
IMDB, that's it. IMDB.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, those letters
you lost me there for a minute. I'm like, I don't don't know what you're talking about, so I'll just keep my mouth shut.
IMDb is a big database of...
I know what it is.
Oh, okay, you know what it is.
You
okay.
used the wrong acronym
right.
the first time.
Yeah, you put the letters in the wrong order. Exactly. It makes no sense.
Hey, I got that old-timer's disease, you know?
CRS?
Exactly.
CRS.
Yeah. And they're also putting the keychain out in the iCloud, which I have, like, mixed feelings about, because I don't really totally trust the cloud yet.
Well, but it's all they're doing is that was they're attacking LastPass and 1Password, I think it's called, 1Pass.
Yeah.
Basically, it does this, it's going to be doing the same thing as those, except it only does it for, you know, Apple products. So, because I actually use LastPass, and I like it, but it works across all platforms, including at work and everything, which to me, it's great, because if I'm on, the lap or my desktop at work and I'm trying to go on to a site that requires a password and I don't remember any of the passwords, you know, I've got that CRS disease. And so, you know, LastPass automatically fills it in for me, and that works on any platform anywhere I'm logged in, which is a real nice feature. So even though it's going to be there, I am probably not going to use it because I already use LastPass, and that to me works better. So,
yeah, I trust. I have a distrust of third party solutions.
Ah, okay. Well, I have more than I use. I use more than just Apple products. I wish that wasn't so, but unfortunately,
yeah, well, I do too. I've got Windows 8 systems, which, not to get into a big discussion about it, I don't understand everybody's complaints about Windows 8 on a desktop with a mouse. I think it's cool. I like it. And, you know, yeah, missing the start menu is a pain, but to me, it's not insurmountable.
Oh, they're going to bring it in 8.1 or something similar to it. It's not going to be the actual start window.
Luckily, it's going to be user selectable so far. Yeah. You know, so if you don't want to use it, you don't have to. Because I kind of like the current Windows 8 paradigm, but anyway,
yeah,
talking about Windows.
The only thing I don't like about Windows 8, and I don't even mind the tabs, although I hardly ever go to the main page when I'm on a desktop. I just bring up the old desktop. But the only issue I have with it, and they could change this real easy, is the fact that if you want to get to that main desktop or if you want to get to anything else, you got to sit there and move your cursor and hover in the corner just right, and then this other thing pops out from the side, and yeah. and then you got to try to maneuver down to it, because where you have to go to call it is not where any of the icons are, so you got to scroll it down, and half the time, if you're like me, you slide off of it and it disappears again, and so it takes me 3 tries to get down to the choices, and it's like, I just think that's a bad design. That's other than Windows 8 crapping out on when I'm using the Audition, which has happened a couple of times. That's the only other complaint I have, is those crappy side.
Yeah, I find that kind of annoying as
menus,
well.
Yeah.
How much memory you have in your Windows 8 machine?
I've got 3 gig.
Yeah, I've got 4, and when I use big applications on it, it does crap out as well. So I think that's probably more of a memory issue.
That could be, and unfortunately, I'm running 64 or 32-bit here. So if I want to increase the memory for this thing, I can go up to 8 gigs.
You mean 8 gigs of RAM?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
If I can go up to 8 gigs of RAM on it, but I have to go up to 64-bit Windows to access it.
Yeah, mine's already 64. Yeah, I only have 4 gigs of RAM, and for just general things like web surfing, email, and things like that, it works okay. But if I got all that stuff going and I start one or two big apps, it does die.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for – I mean, I know my machine, I've got 16 gigs of RAM on it, and I was toying with the idea of maybe saying, hey, what if I can get Windows 8 on my laptop? man.
Well, with 16 gig, you should be okay. What do you have for a processor?
It's a dual core processor, Pentium dual core.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
What speed?
It's the i5, so I'm not sure.
Wow. You'll be fine. Good to go.
You're good.
Yeah, because I've got a original dual core 2.5, and until I fill the memory, everything goes okay.
Mm.
So you're going to be cranking, Josh.
Yeah,
I'm still toying with it. I mean, I just don't want to lose any of my work related, you know, that what I call the hunt and peck, when you got to try and figure out where it just put everything because you just put a new OS.
Yeah. Well, if you have any older apps, you may want to investigate whether they'll continue to run under Windows 8, because I had quite a number of older apps that did run under Windows 7 but don't run under Windows 8 anymore.
I'm not running any apps. I got Windows 7 64-bit, and I actually found that feature again. I forgot I had it. So do you want to put any apps on here? And I'm like, no, it's a laptop. I put apps on a phone. what apps could I
have? Well, I meant applications, you know.
Yeah, right.
I had a number of applications that I've been using for years, and it was pretty much the main reason I was keeping Windows around, was just to keep using these apps. Right. Now I can't use them anymore. You know, it's funny because I found a version of Windows I really like playing with, but now I don't have any reason to play with it because the apps I want to use don't work.
That's a kick in the pants.
Yeah.
No, more like on the other side, you know, in the front.
Oh, man. Well, that was another update, and I'm trying to remember what they did to it, but Safari was totally revamped.
Yeah, and also the Finder now has tabs.
Oh, that's right. Yes, and that's kind of cool. Although they used to have what the heck was it called? There was a third party app that I used for a while. That was a replacement for Finder. I think it was Pathfinder, and they had tabs long before. Obviously long before Finder had them, because
that sounds like an OS 9 app.
No, it was. You can still get it, I think. It's called Pathfinder, but it was a third-party app, and it was just basically Finder on steroids. So they had a place so you could drag and drop that, like you could put it up on the stack. So if if you just wanted to have one window open, you had multiple tabs, and if you wanted to drag and drop something from one place to another, you could first drag it up to the stack, and then click and find the other place you wanted to put it, and then drag it out of the stack and into the place. So. Which, to me, I guess that's what you have to do if you use tabs, though, because otherwise you get to open up two windows to do a true drag and drop.
Yeah. So, I think that I'm going to find that as a pretty handy feature.
That could be. I'll probably be using it more than.
Moving on to iOS, one thing that iOS is going to be getting from macOS is AirDrop. You're going to be able to AirDrop files from your desktop straight to your mobile device.
Yes, and they didn't talk about that much during the thing, but that is.
I know, it's almost like they kind of took it like it was, kind of like a minor thing. You know?
Well, this
is kind of a major thing.
But the other thing AirDrop does is anybody that's on the same network that's tuned into iDrop or AirDrop. For you, like say we're all on the same network in the same room, then you can share files and pictures and things like that by just dragging it and dropping it into that person's name or whatever. They show up on AirDrop, and so as they said at the keynote, they said yes, and you want to share a picture with somebody, you can share it to everybody in the room by just taking this picture and dragging it over here and dropping it. And he goes, notice there was no bumping involved, Yeah. You don't have to go around the entire room and bump everybody's
stuff.
Yeah. So I think that's what they're pushing to use it for, is to be able to share things really easy between iOS devices and people. And but yes, it also works for the laptop. I've noticed on my laptop that it's there, it's under in Finder. I've never really used it because frankly I don't know what I could use it for.
What do you mean?
Well, what would you use AirDrop for on a Mac?
Well, it's sort of like
Sorry, go ahead, Jack.
I apologize. I was, to me, outside looking in, well, I guess not because I'm on a Mac right now, it's it reminds me a lot of like Dropbox, except you don't have to down, if you already have a Mac,
you're
part of the club.
So it's right now, currently, it only works with desktops, and of course, people that have two desktops in the same room. but laptops.
Extensively is because I travel a lot.
Yeah,
I do. When I'm home, I do all my work on a desktop, and of course, I can't bring that with me since it's a Mac Pro and it's like 50 pounds.
Yeah,
it's not easily transportable. So you know, I've got a MacBook Pro that I travel with. Mm-hmm. Whenever I get ready to go, all of my main files are all kept in the same folder on both machines. So all I need to do is just airdrop that folder from one machine to the other, and presto bango, I've got a completely updated set of my recent, my usually almost daily updated files transferred over to the MacBook Pro. And then when I get back from travel, it's just a simple matter of dropping it back to the desktop, and everything stays in perfect sync.
Okay, I guess, and the reason with my laptop and my desktops, if you bring up Finder and you go down to shared, I've got every one of my Mac computers are listed on there, and so you know if I want to transfer a file or copy a file from one computer to the other, I just click on the computer that's there and drag and drop it onto the thing, and it's there. Matter of fact, I also have my Windows boxes all sit there, so I can drag and drop between Windows and my MacBook Pro with no problems. So that's, I guess, AirDrop. I guess if you didn't take the time to set it up so that all your computers are visible in right. Finder on the network, which I did from the very beginning, AirDrop is a quick and easy way to do it. That's already set up for you from the get-go. Although, well, then again, I only have two computers that have AirDrop because my other two computers are old and they don't have it. But I can see that it's going to be really useful for the iOS, between iOS and the laptop. And
I have four. I've got two laptops. I have an iMac and the Mac Pro, but I only really transfer things back and forth between the desktop and my MacBook Pro, the newer one. I've got an older one, but I kind of use that as, you know, something I just kind of beat up on and to manage my Epson printer. It still has software on it that can assess the ink levels and things like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, other things new in iOS, of course, the big thing was they've got a whole new look to it. They flattened everything. One of the features that they were talking about was kind of cool, and I can't wait to see how this works, although it's just a novelty thing, is that when you move your phone, it pays attention to your movement, and the background moves at a different rate than the icons in front of it. On top of it, so it gives it depth of field. So it's like you
can look beneath the icons when you tilt it.
Yes, and I there's a name for it, and I can't remember off the top of the head. Panaflex or something like that, or Pana something.
Kind of a neat effect.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat effect. I don't know whether it would get annoying after a while or you get used to it, but the icons were all flat. Although some people complained, and I'm kind of saying the same thing. I'll get used to it right now. And they also said this is beta. It may change before it comes out.
Right.
But they used really bubblegummy bright colors. And, you know.
Really?
Yeah. It almost looks like actually somebody. What's that game that's real popular now? App game? The Candy Crunch?
If you want it to be, sure.
I think it's, but it's, no, you know, it's got all these bright colors, and it almost looks like a kid's game. And they were saying, you can't tell, iOS 7, you can't tell whether you're playing Candy Crunch or you're looking at your screen, the icon screen on the iOS 7. But
they got rid of all the fake leather and wood veneer and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad about that. Frankly, I think that just took away from it. I'd rather just see a normal calendar. I don't need to have fake leather all around
Come
it.
Come on, a little.
You know what though? With me, I could really give a rat's ass. As long as the shit works the way I want it to work, I don't care what it looks like. You know, as long as it's not totally butt ugly. You know,
I kind of like the new calendar and stuff like that. I looked at it and I said, that's nice. That's functional. It's, all the colors they were using made things jump out and very distinguishable. I kind of like it. They also have the new control panel. Well, it's not a control panel.
Control center,
it's a control center, which is kind of neat.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, although people are complaining about the frost look to it because they said... What it's actually covering up, and there's stuff going on live behind it, and that takes so much. They're spending a lot of time trying to program that to make that work and everything. And it's like, well, good for them because it looks pretty cool, as far as I'm concerned. And I thought it was
neat. Too much.
And people were complaining, well, it doesn't make any sense because the other icons are all colorful and everything, and then you bring this thing up and it's all like just black and white, and it's like it's not even part of the design. And I'm like, I like that because, you know, now I can distinguish between the control center and the rest of the phone.
Right.
So to me, that was kind of neat because, you know, you look, glance down, you say, oh, black and white like that, I'm in the control center. One of the things Michael was saying, because he got to see something live there, was for older people with where their eyesight isn't quite the same as it used to be, the new font and the font sizes they are using are much easier on the eyes.
Really?
Yes.
Someone listened?
I don't like that.
Yeah, and I said, wow. I said, I kind of noticed that from the displays I saw, you know, up on the slides they were showing in the keynote. And I said, I already saw that. And I said, wow, this looks like it's going to be a lot easier to read, you know, for...
That goes a long way.
Yeah. So I was happy to see that. The other thing, too, is they added true... it went in my mind and out. true multiprocessing.
Oh, okay.
They said they were not going to implement that until they could find a way to do it where it didn't sacrifice battery life.
Right.
Because that was their biggest complaint, was that to put multitasking in, it drained the battery incredibly.
And they found a way, and what we said about Maverick, what I said about Maverick, where they're controlling the how much the CPU uses, and if your processor doesn't need it, then they take it away, or if your processor, or your task isn't doing anything at the time, they can move you away from using the processor at all and stuff. Well, they've implemented that in iOS 7 too, so... the other thing they've done is scheduled when different processors need to do, or different tasks need to do things, they try to do them all at once. And an example of that is, say you've got three programs running that need a GPS position. Well, what happens in Android is they all sit there and contact the GPS whenever they need it, you know, whenever the app thinks it needs it. And therefore... the CPU is running twice as much or three times as much if you got three things running than it actually needs, because these things are all running simultaneously and without any coordination. What iOS does is it kind of coordinates it. So if you got three tasks that need GPS, they say, okay, I'm going to be contacting the GPS. What other tasks out there need a GPS call right now? Right. And so they'll do them all at once. And I thought, man, that's a great idea, because that'll save a lot on that. And
that seems like a no-brainer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, but that's a hard thing to program, though. Yeah, if you're an OS, you write OSs for a living, that's got to be one of the more difficult things to do, scheduling like that. So that's really cool. So they finally, it looks like they got it right. And they're going to be doing it.
I don't know, that kind of seems like just having, when the GPS gets requested of a position, you throw it into a register, and whenever any app needs the GPS, they read the register and they go with that, unless it's kind of stale, and then they request the GPS.
Okay, you're getting into fine details. I just use that as an example. There's other things too.
All right.
And that might be a bad example. But, I'm not sure what, it's just they're coordinating everything, and instead of having everybody waiting to go get something or accessing that register multiple times when they think they need it, they're scheduling it so they can put things kind of in a semi sleep until, you know, they wake up this thing and say, okay, we've got a update, and then everybody that's looking at that can I'm explaining this probably very bad. Everybody can get the update all at once, in which case it's just uses the CPU less, therefore uses battery life.
Right.
Less, you know, battery.
So basically, it works on magic.
Yes.
And that's what you want. Magic does not require extra battery power.
Right. So, let's see. What else was there in iOS 7 that they announced? iTunes Radio was announced. And I think that's pretty cool. It's a Pandora equivalent. I'm going to say Pandora killer, but what it is it's free for everybody. In the free version, every once in a while, you'll get a short commercial, not a long commercial, but a short commercial. But you are free to listen to it as much as you want, and you'll get the commercials for pay. But the other thing they said, that if you have the feature where the matching feature for iTunes.
Well, iTunes Match, yeah.
iTunes Match, which you pay for, it's $25 a year. And I pay for it because if I have a crappy copy of a song, mm-hmm. it'll match it and give me a better copy from iTunes.
Basically, it legitimizes all that crap you got from.
All that crap. Somebody that was a gift. It was a gift to me.
Yeah,
it legitimizes it.
Showed up by notice
because artists get a cut of that $25. So, if you are subscribed to that and have that, then you get a commercial free version of iTunes Radio. So I thought that was a neat idea, especially since I do pay for the matching.
Yeah, I pay for the matching as well, but I've never ever listened to any kind of streaming radio to any extent at all. I've messed around with Pandora off and on, but I always find that they're not a whole lot different than listening to terrestrial radio, just without the ads. So, you know, you still get all the same old token songs and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, big deal.
Well, I'm not sure whether, Pandora does. These you can set up your own radio stations, and you can say you're interested.
Pandora lets you do that, but, you know, you go, like if you say you want to listen to Led Zeppelin, they're not going to give you a broad, random cross-section of Led Zeppelin songs. They're going to play the same damn Led Zeppelin hits that FM radio is going to play. So,
right.
Big deal. You know, what's the difference?
I don't know how Apple's going to be. Apple may be better at it. I know what you're talking about with some of the other streaming ones. They give you the same songs. But, you know, it would be interesting to see what Apple does, see if they do it better. They do give you the thumbs up, thumbs down, I guess, equivalent.
Yeah, but I don't really think it's going to be a whole lot different, because just like with Pandora and a lot of these other streaming entities, it's not really up to them.
Well, the other thing, too, is I think not only they use a streaming, I think, and I could be wrong about this, but I think they'll also use songs that you have in your iTunes list also.
You mean iRadio?
Yeah. Or it looks at what you have. Maybe it's, I don't know how they do it, but I think they pay attention to what you've actually bought and have in iTunes, and they'll play those also. In your stream. So that may help out to make it better. I don't know. Well, we won't know until we try. And
I'll definitely try it out and see what it's like. But you know, if it's going to be anything like their Genius mixes, I'll probably give up on it.
Yeah, their Genius mix isn't very good. I know that.
It's not much of a genius.
No, it's not, because it's like...
It's like their favorite color is clear.
It's like, you know... it's so true, because it's like, okay, let's hit the Genius thing, and they'll only play like two albums that I've bought. It'll switch songs between the two albums until it's played both albums all the way through, practically. You know, it's not really giving me a good mix.
The problem with mine is that most of the music that I've been listening to for the past 2 or 3 months have been like heavy punk power pop type stuff, and they keep continually throwing alternative bands at me. And it's like, wait a minute. I might have some of these in my iTunes library only because I have an occasional interest in them. Mm. That's not what I'm really listening to. Mm. And they do include a lot of my favorite jazz and blues artists in the jazz and blues lists. But it's like, why are you throwing all this alternative stuff at me? You know, give me classic rock and give me a lot of heavy metal and things like that. The stuff that I've been listening to consistently. Every once in a while, it will. But then... Mm. Next time I show up in the next morning, it's right back to alternative again. And I have such a small minority of my music library is alternative. It's like, why is it shoving this crap at me? You know, it makes me want to just delete it from my library and say, there, take that.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. But you know what would be neat with iTunes Radio, or I've never tried the other ones. I'm too fearful to try it, but... I would love to be able to use, get that, one of those, and play it at work, because I have a radio at work, and because of where I am, it gets exactly 2 radio stations.
Two in a row?
Yeah, it gets WZID, which is still playing the same songs they did 10 years ago.
Oh, thank God for consistency.
Every day they play the same freaking songs. And then the other one is the rock station.
Rock
101. Actually, it's New Hampshire. And pretty much during the day, they do the same thing. They play classic rock, but they play the same damn songs every day.
Yeah, that's the Clear Channel formula.
Oh, why?
They turn to the record companies and say, what will you pay me the most money to pay?
Like,
and they take those 12 songs, and that's all you hear day after day.
They beat him to death.
Yeah.
You're right. They literally beat him to death. If you listen to 3 hours of any one of those radio stations, you've heard the entire song lineup for the next 24 hours.
This is the reason that I can't believe that the RIAA would not embrace podcasting. Because this was a medium that would allow all kinds of people to just broadcast out all kinds of musical taste and interest to the populace worldwide.
Because,
you know, if you tell and make them agree to, like, don't play anything that's like within 2 or 3 years, you know, which most of us don't want to hear anything that recent, you know, because most of that stuff is just shit, you know, but. You know, if the record company just said, just play everything 5 years older and beyond, we'll be happy. And just let us loose, we would be creating the most amazing advertising process for back catalog of all kinds of musical artists. Right. That their sales would probably jump through the roof.
But they don't understand that, because nobody's looked at new media. They think it doesn't fit their old business model, and oh my god forbid if somebody hears some song that no other radio station's playing, because we don't let them, hears it on a podcast, and oh my god, they buy it in iTunes, which means, oh my gosh, I'm making money. They don't get that.
I can easily say that the last 50 albums I bought across the past few years, I've all heard on a podcast. Because I haven't listened to regular radio since 2005, when I discovered podcasting. And all the new music that I buy, it's all stuff that I've heard on various podcasts. Mm-hmm. And it's stretched across like 40 or so different podcasts, many of which have ceased to exist. But that's where my main influence has been coming from.
Yeah.
And, you know, I keep thinking to myself, you know, look at all these albums by old, awesome artists that are just languishing because the young people today really can't hear any of the older 10 years after, mm-hmm. you know, because nobody's going to play that on any kind of radio,
nope.
you know. And there are a lot of people that would be interested in hearing that. And once they hear it, they're going to want the rest of the album, mm-hmm. you know. And it's like, come on, this is all like incredible material, but no one's ever going to get to hear it because you got your head so far up your ass, you need the dentist to take the toilet paper out.
They're afraid they're afraid to lose that money, that little bit of money that they get from radio stations, because radio stations have very special deals with them. And
well, it's not radio stations. There are like two or three major corporations that control all the radio stations in this country.
Oh, I know.
And that's what killed radio, because it used to be you could go from city to city and town to town and get different programming. And it was like an amazing thing, yeah. you know? It was great to go to another city just so you could hear what their radio station sounded like and what they were playing.
But one of the reasons why they won't let podcasters do it is because they're afraid, oh, I'm not going to get any money from you playing it because you can't afford to pay me anything. But you're getting free advertising.
And, exactly.
And you say, oh, well, you don't get the numbers that a radio station does. It's like, well, I may not get those numbers, but there's 10 million of us doing it. And, you know,
and we're targeting a unique audience
yes.
that your radio stations aren't reaching.
Right.
That can't reach.
Right. Well, you're true. They can't, or nobody wants to listen to it. Who listens to it anymore? I can see a day where even cars will no longer have AM, FM radios on it because they're making they're already putting in connections for your cell phones, your smartphones, and people listen to their smartphones. They listen to it streaming in the car. That's why they're doing it. So, I mean, that's the way it is. That's the future. The internet is the future. Every frickin' radio station out there, small-time radio station, well, even the big ones, Clear Channel and stations and stuff like that, but they all are streaming live on the internet now because they probably get more listeners on the internet than they do tuning in over the air. I really think that we're at a turning point there, and their numbers are going to be bigger on the internet because, hell, especially AM stations, they sound like crap over the air. But they sound like every other station crystal clear on the internet.
Yeah.
Well, even satellite radio, that sounds pretty nice. You go under a bridge or through a tunnel or something like that, and there goes your signal.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, it used to be that streaming would be kind of crappy. And I do have a couple dead zones where streaming ceases out here in the country. And I'm sure, Barty, you do too.
I can't stream on my commute.
Yeah, I figured. But most places, they've got perfect coverage. And even now, coming out to Jaffrey, it's getting better. They're putting up more cell towers and stuff. So it's streaming is the way of the future. And television's going that way. Radio is definitely, music is there already. And they should embrace it.
Speaking of television, I can't wait to see what's going to start happening to TV networks and things like that, when more and more content is available on the internet and you don't have to have any kind of a satellite or a cable TV box to get the programming that you want.
Right.
You know, because over the internet, you're not going to be like buying into a channel. Mm-hmm. You're going to be just simply downloading the individual programs that you want to see.
Well, if they were smart, they would get a new business model and realize where it's going and be there doing it, implementing it, instead of fighting it.
Yeah, well, these guys are like dinosaurs. You know? They're like stomping through the jungle, and they have no idea where they're going, and they know there's a threat. They can smell it. They can see it, but they are clueless on how to address it or join it, you know, and that's the whole big issue. Is these guys need to realize that all this bundled stuff that screws people, people are tired of it. And all, a new alternative is starting to show up where you don't have to spend all this money to get all this stuff and buy packages of stuff that only 5% of which you ever pay attention to.
Right.
You know, you're going to be able to get stuff for no expense at all and other things for small expense and screw all the rest.
Right. A la carte.
The only thing that kind of bugs me about that is there are a lot of channels that don't have big audiences that are going to disappear. You know, probably like the Learning Channel and National Geographic that have a lot of really cool stuff, but I don't know how big an audience they really have. And I kind of wonder if maybe it's only the cable and satellite companies that are keeping them online.
But think about it, though. Even if they're online, or even if they're not, even if they're coming to you via the cable network or whatever, if they don't have content to get an audience, then they don't have an audience. Just because it's on the cable network or your cable box doesn't mean that people are watching it.
Yeah. So, well, you know, there's like two or three shows, maybe four on National Geographic that I like to watch.
Right.
And the Learning Channel has another handful, you know. So I wouldn't want to pay for a subscription to the Learning Channel just for a few shows that I like. If I can get those shows individually,
yeah,
then, you know, screw the Learning Channel. It's gone. Same thing with National Geographic.
Well, I think Leo Laporte's kind of proven that. I mean, look, tech went away from TV completely when tech TV died. And Leo Laporte proved that there's an audience, albeit it's a much smaller audience. But he seems to be making a living and employing several, I don't know whether he's got 100 people working there or not, but he must be approaching it.
Well, he's got a lot of shows.
Yes, he does.
Across the broad spectrum of the Twit network.
Right. And that thing runs 24/7 now. So, now granted, in the middle of the night, a lot of they're just reruns in the middle of the night, no, but
come on. Like regular cable isn't
I know. Reruns. Exactly.
I mean,
or infomercials.
I remember back when the day's broadcasting ended, so did the signal.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And to be quite honest, most of the stuff that I see on my satellite could very well end at 11 or 12, 1 or 2, and it would not be missed.
I know.
Just turn it off, save the freaking electricity, and let's just move on.
Speaking of shows at late night, I was watching Jimmy Fallon, and then Last Call comes on, which actually Last Call is a pretty good show. But after Last Call, I think that goes off at 2 o'clock, and I said, okay, are we going to go into infomercials? This is NBC, and no, they rerun NBC Today show, but it's the 9 o'clock hour, I guess, where they have Kathy Lee Gifford and Hoda, whatever
Holy
her name
cow,
is.
Wow, that's like early morning crap. Yeah.
Have you ever watched that show?
No. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes, I have.
I was ready to shoot myself. I'm like, oh, these two are the most annoying women in the world. They're more annoying than The View. I mean,
I didn't think that was possible.
Well, but The View pisses me off because, I won't get myself in trouble. But it's because of their political point of view. Well, I was going to say something.
The audience, if there is,
oh hell, I don't care. Let me get it. It's a bunch of cackling women chit-chatting. Well, that's Hoda and Kathy Lee. That's all they do, and they just don't shut up.
That's because they're drinking.
I can't believe that, too. They have a show on at 9 o'clock in the morning where those two get sloshed and sit there and talk nonstop for an hour.
Hey, if somebody would pay me that kind of money to get drunk in the morning, I'd do it every day.
You'd be drinking mimosas for breakfast, too.
Oh, they drink wine. They drink wine. But, oh, my God, it was like, this is the most annoying show ever. This is something that if you were Al-Qaeda and you captured people, you'd put them in a cell, and you'd put this on 24/7. You would get anything you wanted out of your captors. Please,
as long as they would stop. As long as they would promise to bring you some wine.
Oh, I just, oh Man, I'm telling you, it was like I was having nightmares that night when I went to bed. It was unbelievable. That's incredible. So, anyway, any other things in iOS 7 that you can remember?
Where this conversation came from
iOS 7. iOS 7 to Hoda and Kathy Lee.
Boy, oh boy, was that a leap.
I'm trying to think.
I think that pretty well covers it.
I think that covers the highlights at least. So, it's going to be available in the fall, and it'll work on on iPhone 4s and up.
Yeah.
Oh, but I've heard from some people that the enhancements that you get with your iPhone 5 will not necessarily be available on your iPhone 4S and definitely not on your 4.
Yes, that's always been true when they come out.
Yeah, some of the 3D effects, being able to look behind the icons when you tilt it and things like that, because don't happen on the 4S.
Because you need the faster processors and the memory to do it. So you'll just get the look, you know. But remember, their job in bringing this out is to convince you to upgrade.
Yeah, really.
And of course, when this comes out, I'm sure the 5S is also going to be announced.
I don't know if it can outshine my BlackBerry.
Well, it doesn't have to outshine it. I mean, the BlackBerry is already so denigrated that, you know, it's like, you know, buried in the ground.
Exactly. Like poison soil, nothing will even grow on it.
Yeah. Oh God. So the other thing that was going on was CE? What? No, that wasn't CE.
E3
conference was going on, and at the same time, the WWDC keynote was going on. Microsoft decided to come out and talk more about the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm. Good luck with that.
And I didn't actually listen to it, but
I heard
some key things, and they were overemphasizing how basically, you're going to be able to play older games if you want or use games, but only if you buy them through them.
Oh, yeah. Well, so the fact that you already have it.
There's another facet to that, too, though.
Yeah.
If you have an older game and you want to allow one of your friends to borrow it, it has to be someone that's been in your friend list for over 30 days.
Really?
Yeah, so if this is a guy that you play with commonly but don't have him in your friends list, and you add him for the purpose of letting him borrow this game.
Right.
No deal.
Well, that puts Gamefly, which is the rental of games, completely out of business, because Gamefly, if you have $8 a month, it's like Netflix but for games. Well, that you won't be able to play anything that's Xbox related, because let's face it, not everybody's going to be on, you know, their whole database isn't going to be on somebody's friends list.
Yeah.
What about the other idea is, it, again, that completely puts out the idea of being able to go to, say, GameStop, buy a used game, pop it in your machine, and they find out that it was registered to, Pete Leibowitz from Boise, Idaho, and now it's here in Boston, Massachusetts, and you aren't on Pete Leibowitz's friends list, it won't work.
Hmm. Well, the other thing they're trying to do is eliminate games on discs too. They would much prefer you download them.
Of course, because now you can't even physically hold something in your hand that you just paid $65 for. No, thank you. Can you say hello, PlayStation?
Yeah, well, I kind of feel the same way. And you know, a lot of the used gaming policies that Microsoft is talking about, they're saying that they don't want to change it a whole lot, but Microsoft wants to be in charge of it.
Just so enough to almost, fuck you over, that's all.
Yeah, it's like GameStop's out of business. You got to go to Microsoft to get permission to play a used game you purchased somewhere. And it's just ludicrous. It's like, are you serious? You know, because like, let's face it, like you said, when you're talking about $60 to $65 for a new freaking game, you really want to make sure that you want to play that game.
Exactly.
I'd much rather find a way to play it cheaper to see if I like it before I shell out that kind of bucks.
Well, Exactly. I mean, I would go to you, Barty, and say, hey, you know, you got the new, you know, Boogerman 3. I'm just making a name up. And you'd say,
really?
Yeah. It literally, yeah. So, you know, I try it out. I like it. So let me borrow it for the weekend. I like it. I give it back to you. Now I'm going to go to GameStop and buy it.
Yeah. Well, have you also seen the pictures of the new Xbox One?
Ergonomically, it looks like shit.
It's a big big old ugly black box. It looks like, seriously?
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the old stereo receivers from the 70s without all the buttons on them.
Yeah.
Big rectangular black box that sat, that sat underneath the reel-to-reel.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's. I mean, it doesn't have to be curvy, in my opinion, you know, with swoops and curves and all that crap. Because I could really give a shit less if it was shaped like a rectangle or a triangle or a fucking trapezoid. I don't care. But what I want is you guys not to try and pigeonhole and back everybody into a corner where they're shelling out all kinds of dough and killing the used game industry. So quite honestly, honestly, goodbye. And that's
You know, so Microsoft makes this big announcement, says all this stuff, talks about the capabilities and specifications of their system. And then later that same day, Sony has their presentation, and they say almost the opposite. They say, well, you know, the present used game policy we have in place, we're going to maintain, is that basically the publishers determine what used games they will allow to be sold.
Right.
And, you know, like EA found out, stopping the successful sale of used games shoots them in the foot because everybody stopped buying EA games.
Yeah.
Flat out. They said, screw this.
I'm not buying it.
It was funny as hell. But, you know, Sony's like, we don't really care. It's not our problem. It's not our business. We're in the business of just selling hardware.
Right.
And, you know, what people run on it is their business. You know, it's just like with the PS3 and then the Xbox 360. You want a new hard drive or larger hard drive for your 360? Yeah, boy, are you in a tough place. With the PS3, you just go to any store and buy a larger capacity laptop hard drive, ESATA, and you shove it in there. It's what I did with mine, you know, and it's not a problem. They even give you instructions on how to do it. Sony has built-in backup and restore instructions to make it possible. You know, when you get ready to replace your hard drive, you back it up to an external drive plugged into a USB port. You put in a new drive and then go to Sony and download a new OS to your PS3 and then just run the restore utility to suck that stuff all back in. Presto bango. Life
Done.
Is good. And they're talking about maintaining the same kind of mentality with the new one. And the new PS4 is going to be much more stylish. It's smaller and, you know, it's much more attractive of a look. Although I really kind of hated that they made it black. Just like Microsoft made theirs black. It would have been nice if it had been a little bit more colorful, more differentiated or so.
Right.
Can you get the same games on PS4 as you can on the Xbox?
99.9%.
For the most part. Each system has got exclusive games that only that system can have.
Okay.
99% of the games, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you wanted to play Madden or if you wanted to play Black Ops or you wanted, they're all available. Those are your big titles are going to be pretty much available between both platforms.
Yeah.
And
Microsoft
just,
is what?
Just to let you know that Boogerman, there was only one version of it. So you were talking about maybe Boogerman 3 or 2.
Oh, okay.
And it's only available on the Wii.
Oh, thank you for researching that. Well, you know, I didn't want to.
Speaking of the Wii, the single reason why I keep my Wii is because I've got an old game that I was able to buy to play on the Wii, Toe Jam and Earl. Totally whacked out game. It is totally crazy. It's, you know, the one of those legacy console games.
Yeah.
Yes. Only single sole reason why I keep my Wii.
I've got it on the TV upstairs, and Anne-Marie uses it to watch Netflix.
You can get better better fidelity from a PS3 or an Xbox than you can the Wii. The Wii is not high def.
Yeah, but we only have a 720p TV up there, so it's good enough for that. But we're actually talking about breaking down and buying another Roku box.
So wait, now that we got Aereo,
yeah.
I'll tell you what, man, it's worth having a couple of Roku boxes in the house.
Because they're cheap.
Yeah.
You know?
50 bucks. Yeah,
it's 70 bucks, right?
50.
Well, 50, or if you get the Roku 3, it's 90 bucks, I think, 99.
What do you get with the 3? All I know is whatever one I get, it has to be the high def one, and I do not like the one that's like a thumb drive.
No, this one's a regular, like the Roku 3. It's $99, I think, and it's basically the same as the Roku 2. It's the high def version, except for they put a faster processor on it in it, more memory, so it flies. And the only other thing that I could see that was kind of neat, if you're especially in a bedroom atmosphere, is they've got a remote control that's got a place where you can plug in headphones to it.
Wait a minute. If you're laying in bed,
yeah,
and the TV's across the room on the wall,
yeah,
which is probably where the Roku box is, somewhere on a shelf right there, so you can change channels up and down.
Right.
How long does the cord have to be?
It plugs into your remote control.
Oh, into the remote control, and it wirelessly. Right. Okay.
Yeah, so and the remote control is also it's RF. It's not an IF. Right.
Okay. So, all right. Now that's making sense. Otherwise,
yeah.
You know, literally, you see where I'm going with this one. You need to have a 37-foot long cord while you're laying in bed trying to listen to the TV.
No. It's
the person on the other side trips over when they go to the bathroom.
Go to the bathroom in the middle of the night.
No, it plugs into the remote control. Which I thought was kind of a neat feature. So
yeah, one other neat thing that I saw too, actually for watching TV in bed, which I thought was awesome, is taking the flat screen TV and mounting it to the ceiling.
Above your head?
There is no mirror, but if you want to lay in bed and watch TV, you literally have the TV on the ceiling.
Well, now, Barty, if you get a small camera and attach it to the display on top...
Oh, GoPro will do that.
Yeah, well, there you go. You got your virtual mirror.
Well, guys, this has been fun, but I really got to win.
That's just wrong, you guys. I want you to know.
Yeah, now Jazz is wondering how he can mount a mirror on his ceiling and the TV.
I'm not even remotely entertaining that. I was just about
like, there. Well, you know, if I could put a couple of cameras up there, I could make some extra money.
You guys are just so fucking twisted.
You're just upset that we beat you to it.
Innovation, that's all. Oh, and before you go, Barty, just one other thing. They did announce, Microsoft did announce that they're coming out with another Xbox 360. And all they're going to do is basically, I think, put it in the same bland box.
Well, the big thing, the reason why they have to is because if you want to play games offline, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Because... The new Xbox One has to phone home at least once every day, or you can't play games on.
Right.
So, you know, if you're some kind of a monk living in a cave and just play games by yourself, you're screwed. The machine won't work.
Well, you don't have internet access. If your internet, and I had this happen, there's a big winter storm, the internet goes down. Power's still on, but the internet's down. Well, all right, well, I can't really stream any TV. I might as well play a couple of games. And if it's got to get on the internet to call mommy and to see if it's okay.
You're not playing games. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, somebody made a big fun of that, too, because they were saying, and you can play all the solo games you want without having to phone home.
Yeah. Well, the other thing they said, if you've already got an Xbox 360, don't buy this one as an upgrade, because the only thing that's different between what you've got and this one is the new case. They didn't upgrade any of the internals. The
360, yeah. Well, that's been the case all along, though. They've improved the cases and things and tried to improve the airflow because the fuckers were dying.
I know.
Keep overheating the damn BGA in it. I've got the old white ones, which do get the red ring of death. Mine haven't. But Barry, you got the black one, which has the improved cooling, and it won't.
I had a black one that died.
Really?
It red-ringed on me.
Really?
Hmm.
Yes, it did. Now I've got I'm on my third Xbox now, and this is one of the more stylish ones. And, sure, you know, that's going okay, but I haven't had it very long. And to be honest, I play it only when Adam's, my son and my grandson's online.
Right.
I very rarely turn it on because I'm afraid to use it.
So my PS3
is my original one that I bought before I ever bought an Xbox, and it's still going strong. It's just now starting to show some weaknesses. I'm starting to get some lockups and things on it now.
But that's still good, though. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that bothered me. And I got the Xbox because, well, frankly, you guys all have Xboxes. And but I'm like, if this thing dies, that's it. I'm done. You know, I'm not going to go out and buy another freaking Xbox.
That's the way I feel about this one here. This is like, you know, if this one dies, three strikes, you're out. I'm not buying another.
Right, right. Like I said, I bought mine in 2009, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had a red ring incident yet.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very happy with that.
You buy them brand new or used?
Brand new at Wally World.
All right, because some of the used ones that you buy from GameStop.
Yeah, they've been reflowed. They fixed the BGA issue.
Yeah, yeah, they've done things to them to make it more reliable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they actually warranty them where Microsoft won't.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually thinking about buying a third one though, just because with the Xbox One, I thought, well, if that was my only option, and these eventually will take a dump on me, I don't want to be without an Xbox to play, you know, online. So I thought about buying another one from GameStop just to put it aside.
Yeah.
For less than $100, why not?
Until, of course, Microsoft decides to change the Microsoft network and only allow Xbox Ones on it.
Oh. They won't do that because they're going to be selling 360s for a while.
Oh, that's true. Right. Yeah.
For people who want to play offline.
Offline, right. Not to mention, I mean, in the event that they decide to get greedy like they're trying to now and realizing, oh boy, do we just step into a big pile of poop. That's when you go, hello, PlayStation. You mean I can buy a PS4 for less money than the new Xbox One? Play all the games on it. Yeah, you know what? Let's try PS4 for the next decade.
And isn't it true, Barty, that PS3, PS4, the Sony network, that's free?
Yes, yeah. It is.
Why do people buy Xboxes?
Because of the hype. And to be quite honest, the online environment on the Xbox really is better than on the PlayStation. Mm. Because the PlayStation online environment is put on by the game publishers, and it's kind of hit or miss.
Okay.
Where the online environment on the Xbox is put on by Microsoft, and they have their typical Microsoft, you will do this type requirement.
Rock solid kind of thing, right.
Now, does the PS3 or the Sony network, do they also do what, you know, my Xbox 360 can do?
You
can watch movies.
You can get Amazon movies and all that kind of stuff.
So they got apps, too.
Yeah, they got apps.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So there's not really that much difference between them except for a better interface.
Unless you're a Halo fanatic or something like that, mm-hmm. It's not that big a deal.
Right, because you can't get Halo on the PlayStation.
Exactly.
Okay. Hey, find another game.
There's a couple other titles that you can't get on the PlayStation, and the PlayStation has a number of titles that you can't get on the Xbox.
Like what? I'm curious.
There's one that's called Resistance, and I love that.
Yeah.
That is an awesome one. That's one of those post-apocalypse type things where aliens have come over and destroyed our world and we're trying to fight our way back.
What do you mean, that like what's going to happen now?
Say what?
What's going to happen in the next couple of years? Between that and the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, really.
Isn't that what's that TV show? I watch it. I can't even remember the name. Skyfall?
Skies. Walking Dead.
Huh?
No, Falling Sky.
Falling Sky, yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool show.
I like
it. It used to take place in Massachusetts, but now they're like down south somewhere.
They're in Charleston, but they started up in Boston. They were all from the Boston area, and they worked their way down past Philadelphia.
that's pretty interesting.
Yeah,
never even heard of it.
Oh, really? It's a good show. I think is it on Sci-Fi Channel or TNT?
TNT
TNT show. Yeah.
Well, that's why I haven't.
Oh, that's why you haven't.
I don't have TNT.
See?
Well, you can. I think you can get it on iTunes. You can probably get it on the Amazon thing. So.
I'll be honest with you. I've looked at the prices on those, and per episode, they're pretty darn expensive.
Yeah, they are
on iTunes. Yeah, I don't buy anything on iTunes.
No, I mean, they're seriously.
Are you an
expensive.
Amazon Prime customer?
No, just regular Amazon.
Yeah. All right, well, Amazon's video services might have them. I haven't really looked because, you know, I get it over the air, but over the satellite.
I downloaded it to the Xbox, and I bought the movie Ted, you know, which I have to say cracked me to hell up off of Amazon, and yeah, but not the Prime. I just have the regular Amazon Video.
Yeah. You watched that movie? Was it any good?
Oh, dude, I laughed my ass off.
Okay.
I mean, that was a seriously funny movie. Yeah. And I thought it was going to be kind of corny and stupid, but if you like Mark Wahlberg, and if you, it's a good comedy. You know, it is stupid. Okay, a living, breathing, yeah, pot smoking, beer drinking, teddy bear. And you say, well, if you go into it with the idea, okay, it's a teddy bear that's, you know, literally an alcoholic, then you're going to say it's actually quite funny.
Yeah, well, it's Seth MacFarlane who does Family Guy,
and I love Family Guy.
Yeah, so, I don't care for that kind of stuff. Well, anyway, I got to be going, guys.
Okay, Barty. Thanks.
We'll talk to you later.
It's been
fun talking to you guys. You all have a good week ahead.
Okay, and hope you're here next week for show 99.
Ooh, next week I'm going to be in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Okay, so you're going to definitely be here. Be here for show 100 in 2 weeks.
At this point, I can say yes, but I'll see where I am at that time.
Okay. All right, Barty. Take care.
Catch you later.
You guys, too. Happy Father's Day to Josh. Thanks.
You, too.
Happy Father Wannabe to you.
Thanks. Well, I do have a dog and a cat.
It's not quite the same.
No, I'm not even going to go there.
I was going to say, I've never had to change a husky's diaper before, but I've done a couple of kids, and you know what? I'd rather change the one on a husky.
Yeah, all you need is a shovel.
Oh, God. All right. We'll see you, Marty.
Bye-bye.
Oh, too much.
Yeah. My, oh, my.
So, anyway, we're actually out of topics. Oh, we didn't talk about the Rib Fest.
Oh, the Rockin' Rib Fest.
Yes.
Well, I can say this much.
Yeah.
I heard it was crowded. I didn't go.
You didn't go this year?
No. My beautiful bride went and did the race there.
Yeah.
Lenny a mile, but she went this morning, and I guess as a Father's Day treat for me, I got to sleep in. And it's okay because I had like several brandies last night, so I actually slept really, really good. And woke up and she was already off into the races, and literally. And so then from there, when she came home, how was the race? She said hot, but that place was insane as far as the crowds.
Really?
Yeah
it's getting bigger every year.
It was literally, she said, it was. You were bumping into people everywhere, shoulder to shoulder in some instances and in places, and in which case you want it to be successful, but if it keeps getting bigger and the square footage stays the same, but the attendees are larger, well, then it goes from, it becomes crowded and uncomfortable.
Right, and for people who don't know what we're talking about, each year Merrimack, I think it was St. Joe's was sponsoring it this year? So St. Joe's Healthcare?
Yes.
St. Joe's Healthcare, and it's a rib fest. I think that's funny.
At the Budweiser
plant. At the Budweiser plant in Merrimack, New Hampshire. It started off, and it wasn't that big a deal a few years ago. And each year, it just keeps growing and growing. So they have all these people. And, well, you've been to it, so why don't you
explain? They also have, the big thing is they have a barbecue, which is recognized barbecue cook-off. So they've got teams that come from all over the country that will compete on their recipes and cooking techniques for ribs. How do they cook ribs, beef brisket, pulled pork, some of the other ones that are out there, and there's competitions with cash prizes, and these folks travel all over, and I mean the food hands down, is to die for. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a fan of barbecue, which I happen to be, there is no such thing as bad barbecue. There's just not enough.
And, very good.
And honest to God, it was, you know, the family and I, obviously, we all went last year, and I think I had the best ribs I've ever had in my life. Wow. I bought from there, and I've eaten a lot of ribs. And I'm not a big fan of beef ribs. I like pork. Mm-hmm. But they had an air show there with that, you know, while we all sat there on the lawn and looked up and were having a big old, big, huge honking bowl of, like, fresh-cut potato french fries. You actually watched them slice the potatoes on the potato slicer and then deep fry them with the skin still on. You know, so we got this big, you know, like, $20 bowl of french fries. Me and my beautiful bride and the kids were all sitting there and watching this air show, which was absolutely phenomenal. They had music playing in, like, a half shell off to one side on the stage, which was really, really good. A lot of, you know, your what I call your hard rock cafe kind of blues rock kind of thing, which was awesome. It was a really, really good time. And hot. Jesus, God almighty, was it hot outside. I remember that last year.
Yeah.
But so I kind of wanted to go this year, but at the same time, too, I would have, and I'm not, I like spending more time with my wife, and I know if she was running that race, it's, you know, she's doing literally, they have a foot race with the whole track laid out and cones and, mm-hmm. and a whole nine yards. So I'd be killing a lot of time by myself.
Yeah.
And
plus she's become a vegetarian, so
yeah,
not much there for her.
Well, exactly. I mean, the thing of it is, actually, with her, I call it her vegetarianism. She's like what I call a 98 percenter.
She'll go out and hog 2% of the time. She will go out and
she'll have a little bit of meat. It just doesn't, you know, it's like a lot of vegetarian. I know a lot of folks who are like 99 or 98% vegetarian. It's just meat's really, it doesn't agree with them, or it's harder to digest.
Right.
And you stay away from it.
And actually, once you get used to a vegetarian diet, you actually don't, you lose the taste for
meat. Right. Yeah. Now, or beef especially, however. There are those that, you know, every so often, you know, you can two, 3 weeks of all the meals being wonderful vegetarian meals. And then you hear, I want steak.
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing is, what makes me chuckle is the feeling and the craving is absolutely as legit as ever. And they're thinking a steak the size of a pizza pie pan. And the funny thing is it ends up being this little teeny tiny, like, portion of steak that might fit on a, you know, like a serving spoon end. And it's all the more meat. And it's like, oh, that was just enough.
Yeah.
You know, and then go another 2 weeks and just eat vegetables, which, God bless them. You know, anybody who's a vegetarian, I think, man, you know, I'm totally like that kind of willpower, I think, is awesome.
Well, you know, your wife is doing a lot of research on different things, and she posts a lot of her findings on Facebook, and I follow her on Facebook, and she actually has some pictures of some of the stuff, and I gotta say, some of it sounds quite yummy. Mm-hmm. Which some of the concoctions she's come up with, and I'm like, ooh, that looks good. I'm never gonna give up meat, but
right.
You know, that looks good.
I'll be honest with you. My wife actually got me, you know, as a positive influence, which I have to say I really enjoyed. But she said, you know, a couple things. Every time you eat a meal, you always have to have had a vegetable accompany that meat that was living. In other words, not boiled to death or you know, in other words, a fresh some salad or some green beans or something that was living as a vegetable. So it goes along with it to help you aid your digestion. And she's right. And the other thing was, and I really dug this one because I didn't think I could even do it. Honest to God, I didn't think I could do it. And then I did it, and I realized you do feel better, which was I started off with, she goes, 1 day a week, meat-free.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's pretty interesting. And when I had tried it, and I want to pick back up on it again, I did meat-free Mondays.
Hmm.
And I thought, well, what in the hell am I going to do? I can't, you know, I can't live without meat. Oh, I'm going to perish. I'll die. And I got up in the morning, and I had my coffee like normal. And I love cornbread, and I had cornbread like normal, corn muffin. And I had a little bowl of oatmeal. And was I hungry? No. Was it all the flavors I love? Yep.
Yep.
Got to lunch, and I had this massive garden salad. you know, and I had the dressing on it that I like and the whole nine yards, and I was completely full from that. And then at night for dinner, I thought, well, here's the kicker, dinner. I cannot how can I survive life and not have a meat with my dinner? And you know what I ended up I had pierogies, which were absolutely friggin' phenomenal. I had pierogies, which had potato and onion in them.
Yep.
With tomato sauce. And then another time, I had had cheese-filled ravioli.
You know what's, for me, if I wanted to have an all-vegetarian meal, and it's a, to me, it's a great meat substitute, and maybe it's just me because I love it, is eggplant parmesan.
Yeah, see, I don't dig on eggplant. Okay. I tried, yeah. But...
I love that, and to me... If you gave me that, I don't need to eat meat with that.
You know what? That's the truth. It's funny. My wife had said, too, one time I was throwing, you know, some steaks and stuff on the grill, and she had gotten these big hunk-a-chunk-a, like portobello mushrooms.
Oh, yeah.
Marinated those things, you know, in a marinade of, you know, like extra virgin olive oil and seasoning stuff. To throw that on the grill. And I tell you, I had a bite of it. I'm like, son of a bitch. It's not a steak, but
no.
I would not be saying I'd be hungry if I ate that instead of the steak. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep.
So, pretty darn impressive. Darn impressive. So watching what you eat carefully, it's funny. I don't know if it comes with age or – actually, I think a lot of it for me it does because I'll be honest with you, man. If I eat a bunch of junk food –
You feel bad after.
You feel like crap.
Yeah.
And and I'll be honest with you, I get heartburn at the moment's notice now if I eat junk. And I don't like that. I'd rather cook something at home than get eaten processed food, you know what I mean?
And another thing that I've noticed, especially as you get older, is your eyes are way bigger than your stomach.
Oh, my God, yeah. I never thought the day would come when I'd sit there and go, I'd like to have the small this and the small that.
Yeah, well, I still have a problem doing that. So even this is eating at home, I'll pile up my plate. Like, for instance, tonight, and I went out on the grill and did up ribs. Mm-hmm. And now, I did eat the ribs as many as I did, but she had potatoes, and they were kind of small white potatoes.
Yep.
And so I pulled two out, and I said, oh hell, I better make three because these are small, you know.
Yep.
And so I baked them on the grill too. Yep. And we had that and some asparagus.
Yep.
And I ended up one of the potatoes went to the dog because I was like,
no way I'm going to eat it. And I'm that way with corn. I love corn on the cob, like you read about. I mean, I love corn on the cob. You know, whether it's the shoe peg or the butter. Bread and butter.
Oh yes, yeah. They put the butter on it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a type of corn that you can grow. I have done this, and again, I attribute this and thank my wife because. She'll come home, and she's brought home corn on the cob. And she'll say, hey, I cooked you guys up some pork chops and corn on the cob and this and that. I'll take 6 ears of corn, sit down, and that's my dinner. I'll just eat 6 ears of corn. It's so friggin' good, man. I don't care about the pork chops. I'll just eat ear after ear after ear of corn.
Yeah, it is good. There's only two things... Two foods that I have to have salt on. I have to have it on popcorn.
Yep, yep, I agree, sir.
And I have to have it on corn on the cob.
I agree, sir.
Now, I can eat regular kernel corn, and I won't put salt on it.
Really? See, that's pretty impressive. I'll sprinkle a little on there.
But if it's on the cob...
Yeah, it's getting buttered and salt.
Butter, yeah, exactly. It's got to have butter and salt on it. So I'm pretty good.
And that is very good. That's incredibly good. I used to get frustrated, and I realized as a grown-ass man that, well, hell, I paid for the goddamn butter. You remember how you used to have to take the knife, and the butter knife, and you cut a little pat of the butter off there, and then I would take my fork, stab the pat of butter, and then you try and run it down the ear of corn.
Yeah.
You know, while you turn it, so you can get butter all on it. And I thought, now that's a pain in the ass, because once the butter starts to melt, it falls off the fork, falls off the, maybe even misses the plate.
Well, then
and you're like, what a mess. So what I did is I started taking the butter, stick of butter in the butter dish. Brand new stick of butter.
Mm-hmm.
Stick it in there. I put my ear of corn right on the top of it lengthwise. And I spin it. Perfectly buttered every time.
Well, now, I've heard when you said that, whether it's a type of corn or not, but I've heard that people will take butter and put it on a piece of bread.
Bread, right.
And then you spin your corn on the bread.
Yep, I've done that, too, in years past. And you honestly, if you don't want to have the quote-unquote sacrificial stick of butter that will have, you know, the little hairs on it from the husks after you pulled off from the corn, even though it's been boiled and cooked. Yeah. I don't have a problem with the top of the butter looking concave because I sat there and spun ears of corn across the top of it. Because you know what? By the time I cut a pat of that and smear it on some toast, it's going to taste fine anyway.
Yep.
And let's face it, I'm probably putting it on toasted cornbread. So,
which means it's going to melt on there anyway.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I hear you. I understand that. I have become an expert, though, of running it back and forth with a knife on the top until it falls off into the dish. I do it on with the corn on the dish, and then falls off kind of underneath. And then I've become a master of you take a fork and you just kind of run it back and forth on top of the plate and spin the corn on the plate.
Yes. You know what? And the other thing, and it's funny, you know, for proper quote unquote etiquette for eating an ear of corn. So every household has probably no less than a whole container full of those little things that you stab into the ears of corn on either end. And so you have these things, the little handles that you with the fork. That's how you're supposed to eat it. I don't know about you, but every time I've tried, I mean, when I need to really get a good bite, deep, hard bite right up against that cob.
Those things fall right out.
They fall right out. So I'm just holding the damn ear of corn in my fingers. I don't care if I got butter all over them.
I always give me a napkin, and I always hold the ends of the corn. Yeah.
Hold the ends of the corn, the corn on the cob, and just eat it.
Yeah.
And that way you don't have to put the little holdy handle things through the dishwasher, because I didn't use mine.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And lately, we haven't even been boiling the corn, and we just
eat it.
No, we cook it, but what we do is we take it, we shuck it, and then we get a little bit of aluminum foil. We put a bit of olive oil in there, and then wrap it up. And I do them on the grill, and they come out so nice.
I actually had the last 5 years of corn, and five is a key number because I sat down and ate 5 years of corn. We're cooked just that way.
Yeah. I love it like that, and then the olive oil gives it a little bit extra zing to it, but it helps cook it, and it works good with baked potatoes, too.
Yeah, baked potato off the grill.
Yeah, a little olive oil, and you know, wrap the baked potato in aluminum foil and just stick it in the back of the grill.
Yeah. Boy, now I'm hungry all over.
I know, really.
I mean, we all know I can have a glass of iced tea and I'll be full, but I like the idea of having a couple of years of corn
now. I think when I get downstairs, me and Mr. Red Stag are going to have a little nightcap.
I hear you there.
I had today, though, this afternoon, while I was, of course, when you're grilling, you always have to have some kind of adult beverage with you.
You don't want to get parched, you know.
No. And so, it's the weekend, so pretty much, unless it's pouring rain, I'm out at the grill, and I'm even sometimes out there in the pouring rain doing it.
It's only rain.
Yeah, and I have this big umbrella, and
absolutely,
it's not a problem. But I was drinking homebrew too, QRM homebrew too. I'm almost out of it now, but boy, they went down nice, you know. And they're probably pushing a year old now, and they are perfect.
Really?
Yes. So, but me thinking, we're going to have to make a trip down. I'm going to have to do a Thursday night. I'm going to have to plan it with you.
Yep, come down to Jasper's.
Yeah, go down to Jasper's and pick some stuff up. And I'm also one to look. I might just go get one of the turkey fryer kits, because I think they may be cheaper than buying one that's made specifically for home brewing.
Right.
Because it's the same damn stove.
It's just, it's a burner. All it is a propane gas burner.
Yeah, but it's got extra
It's got a larger regulator, so it can get hotter.
Right, and it's got extra, I would say,
holes.
Stability.
Right, exactly. And the thing of it is, you've nailed it on the head. The one that you used, I mean, let's face it, if you're deep frying a turkey, one, that oil's got to get pretty darn hot to deep fry a turkey when it can be upwards of 20 pounds.
Right.
And it's dense meat, so you're trying to get, that oil has to be incredibly hot to get all the way through.
Yeah.
I think you're going to get a win-win by buying one that's for deep frying turkeys and do that for cooking up batches of beer.
Well, I think even the pot that comes for deep frying turkeys would be probably a good brewing pot.
It's the same one. Yeah, it's the same damn. It's huge.
Yeah, I might be able to. Well, then I'd have to get bigger. Bigger. Whatchamacallit? I have 5 gallon pails.
Yeah, 5 gallon buckets.
Yeah, I'd have to get bigger buckets or something. I don't know. Well, I'll have to investigate.
That's easy to do, to get a seven gallon bucket if you're cooking, you know, if you're brewing up the beer in a 5 gallon bucket.
That's true. Home Depot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the idea behind it, and realistically, I mean, you're going to be brewing in the garage anyway
with the
cooker, so you got to sit in the garage and drink beer while you make it.
Right. Oh, that's a given. and smoke a cigar.
Oh. It goes without saying. That's sort of like having potatoes with no gravy.
So, soon, I think we're going to make a trip down there on a Thursday or something so I can pick up supplies. Because you said that's the night they stay open late, right?
Yep. As a matter of fact, let me peruse over here to the website now. And if I hit, and I'm here, and I hit contact. And hours, Thursday nights, open till 7 p.m.
Yep, that would be good.
Yes, sir.
That would be good. Okay. You'll be getting a call from me.
I look forward to it.
And then we'll get all set up, and then I'll have you up the weekend we're going to do it.
Sounds like a plan to me. Yeah. Let's see here. It's. And this time I'll actually call when I'm in town. I'm in town now. Should I still swing on by?
Sorry I missed you.
No, it was my fault. You said, hey, when you get in town, call me. And I got into town and ended up getting wrapped up working on my truck and everything. And next thing you know, I forgot to call. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to shoot over there to Barry and his beautiful brides. And sure enough, you guys, like normal folk on a weekend day that's gorgeous, let's go out.
We just went to get some soft ice cream.
Right.
Well, she got soft ice cream. I got regular ice cream. I got Moose Track ice cream. So good.
I wouldn't know. I'm lactose intolerant.
So that's right. You can't do ice cream, right?
So I'll have sherbet.
Yes.
Let me rephrase that for the 4.3 listeners that say I call bullshit on that. Yes, I will make my own homemade baked macaroni and cheese. And yes, it has a ton of cheese and dairy in it when I make it. And yes, I will suffer for 7 days after eating it, but it's worth it.
What? Is that an intestinal problem, or is it just you get an upset stomach?
Actually, it's more of an intestinal thing.
Okay.
It's your stomach. It'll hurt. Your guts will hurt.
Okay, but Prilosec won't help with that.
No, and trust me. Let's just say, stock up on Renuzit or Glade. I've driven the entire family out of the house. On rainy days, after eating a tray of baked macaroni and cheese. Not even a tray, just a portion of it.
Oh, God.
But you know what? It is worth it. At least for me.
I can see your son saying, Dad, can we have that on the last night I'm here?
I go back to Mom's. But the funny thing is I'll make it. I'll bake it on a Saturday, and we'll have my son and I and my daughter. My wife doesn't eat cheese in any way, shape, or
form.
Right,
she can't. Yeah,
she can't. She's definitely allergic to it. So, I mean, she's really gracious because think about it. When I'm cooking, it's got 5 different types of cheeses, and you're making a roux on the stovetop. So you got your flour and your water, and then you're adding your cheese to that nice and slow. And basically, it's got this wonderful cheese aroma that's just permeating the whole house. And she can't stand the smell of this stuff, but she doesn't say one word. She does say now, she goes, if you're going to make a big giant batch, let me know so I can coordinate and go out with one of my friends. I'll be out of the house that whole afternoon so you can cook it and air the place out.
Does that even upset her?
Yeah, she hates the smell of the
stuff.
Oh,
okay.
She tolerates it up to a certain point.
But it doesn't make her sick.
No, not the smell. The smell won't make her sick, but you know, just don't. She can't eat it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a shame. Cheese is so good.
No kidding. Yeah, put cheese on Cheerios if I thought it tastes good.
There you go. Oh, cheese.
Goat cheese is delicious. I actually put some in my homemade mac and cheese. I put goat cheese.
Yeah.
One of the ingredients.
Yeah. That's and then, of course, the best cheese is Velveeta.
Well... enjoy. This is where you and I like Velveeta, but I'm not going to call it the best cheese. My personal favorite is New York Super Extra Extra Sharp, usually aged 3 to 5 years. Mm. That's good eating, man. Yeah. I'll literally sit down with a stick of that stuff, and I love doing this. Every time my wife and I go grocery shopping, not every time, but quite frequently, I'll buy one of those Pepperidge Farm summer sausages.
Uh-huh.
I'll buy the saltines-like crackers or the soda crackers.
Yep.
I'll buy a stick of that New York Extra Sharp cheese. I'll make a meal out of just slicing cheese, put it on a cracker, put a little piece of the beef summer sausage on there, and I'll sit there and drink wine and eat that. And
wow.
The family aren't real happy about 2-3 hours later.
It's that Glade thing again. Eh?
Exactly. Operation Glade. Actually, we call it Operation Febreze. Febreze. Walk around Febreze. I've been chased where my butt's been Febrezed.
Oh, God. too much. Oh. Anyway. Well, I think we better call it. We're getting close to... we'll be shy of 2 hours, but we need to. We keep saying we're going to cut it down. So
right, and this is a perfect opportunity to do just that. Yeah. And by the way, if you ever wanted to make and you wanted to get Febreze, you know, have company coming over, realize that you don't have any, and you want to, you know, spritz and smell the house up nice. Do you know what Febreze is?
No.
Fabric softener.
Really?
If you take your favorite one, I don't care, Downy or whatever brand that you like. And you put, get a squirt bottle, and you put like one of the caps that come with the container, the large one, in a squirt bottle, and then fill the rest up with warm water. You can spray that on any cloth material, and it won't stain it, because fabric softener doesn't stain your clothes. You spray it on the couch, spray it on the curtain, spray it on the carpet, on the floor. Whole house smells absolutely fantastic, no stains whatsoever. That's Febreze. Fabric softener.
I never thought about that. We always use the fabric softener sheets.
Yeah, you can take those and tuck them around the corners and put them on the vents when the heat turns on, and it makes the whole house smell good. We've done that. Well, I did that when we had forced hot air.
Yeah, yeah.
But my wife told me that. She's like, she says, it's fabric softener. Cut it with water and spray it all over the house. Smells great.
Yeah, I was going to say, all it is probably fabric softener cut with water. Yeah.
It's all liquid fabric softener cut with water.
Jeez, how about that? Wow.
Well, there's our household household good homemaker tip for the podcast.
There we go. Make homemade Febreze. Mm-hmm. Yep. I can't talk. So, all right. Well, we do have a musical guest tonight. That musical guest is Les Dion and his song "God Strong," and before we go, we'd like to, as we do every week, give a shout out to all our military people, both CONUS and OCONUS, especially the guys OCONUS.
And gals.
And thanks for what you do. Stay strong. And hopefully we'll get you home here with your family and friends as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
So with that, from the southwest corner of New Hampshire, I said it. This is Barry J.
And from the southeast corner of New Hampshire, this is Josh.
And you probably think that's really far. Wow, he lives on one side of the state, and I live all the way
on the other side
of the state. Yeah, it's only an hour away.
An hour and 5 minutes.
New Hampshire's not very wide.
Well, at the bottom. At the bottom, it's a point. At the top, it's wide.
Oh, no, that's
the other way around.
That's Vermont.
Whoops, never mind. What state do I live in? No,
up at the far north end of New Hampshire.
Right.
If I said I was from the southwest corner and you said you were from the southeast corner, we'd probably be next door neighbors.
Well, I am from the southeast corner, but like you said, it's still.
But up north. If we were,
oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Well, we wouldn't be. We'd be from the northeast corner. Exactly.
If you're from the northwest and I'm from the northeast, we pretty much would be like two houses apart.
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. So don't take any kind of directions from us.
We all failed geography. We're pretty smart with computers and robots, but really bad with geography.
Yeah, really. And by the way, if Michael, you're listening, I did see that comet in the northeast corner of the sky yesterday. You have to listen to a few shows back for that. Yeah. All right.
Turn around. Anyway.
All right, that's it. So we'll see you guys next week for show 99.
Skipper.
All right, here's Les Dion. Samson, speak. Good boy.